This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, and welcome to the Cool Project Show. I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and we talk to people from around the world who have projects. Today with us, we have John O'Sullivan. He's the founder of the Changing the Game Project and the author of the international bestseller, Changing the Game, The Parent's Guide to Raising Happy, High-Performing Athletes and Giving Youth Sports Back to Our Kids. John has nearly three decades of playing and coaching experience in youth, high school, college, and professional soccer. He also consults with organizations such as the U.S. Youth Soccer, USA Football, U.S. Lacrosse, and other sports organizations across the U.S., Canada, and Europe. When John speaks, he brings to the table a wealth of practical, hands-on knowledge garnered through many years of working with players and their families on sport-specific development, fitness and nutrition, college recruiting, and most importantly, training high-performing athletes by creating a player-centered environment. John, it is such a pleasure having you on the show.
It's awesome to be on. I'm honored. Thank you for having me on.
First, let's talk about you and your background, and how did Changing the Game come into play?
Well, basically, you know, my background was in mostly in the sport of soccer, but I was a multi-sport kid growing up and then decided to pursue soccer and played collegiately and then got to play professionally for a while and then got into coaching. I coached high school, I coached youth, I coached NCAA Division I college for a while, and but really Changing the Game Project came about as I became a dad and my kids started playing and I started looking at sport from that perspective as well and saying this is not like it was when I was growing up. This isn't about kids competing against kids, this is about adults competing against adults through their kids. And all my friends were complaining about it, and nobody was doing anything about it. So I decided, well, you know, how about I do something about it? And that's when I researched and wrote the book you mentioned and started this thing in 2012, and it's just grown incredibly fast. So I guess that tells me it's a message and something that parents and coaches can get behind and they want to be a part of.
Right. Now, first of all, where can we get the book?
You can get the book anywhere from Amazon to Barnes & Noble, so bookstores or online in any of the big retailers or even my website, changingthegameproject.com. You can find it there, and it's got Kindle, audiobook, all that fun stuff.
Right. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted you here today was you actually spoke at TED Talks at the Bend in Oregon, and it really resonated with what you were saying about sports and parenting and athletes. You know, with my child, we actually had to pull him out of hockey at the age of four because it was just not that nice environment, and the pressure on the children from their parents was incredible. They all thought their kids were the next Wayne Gretzky. Now, as a parent, was I being overreactive in this? And what advice do you have for some of those parents?
Well, it's always a hard thing, right? And so I think if we look at sports as part of a child's education, then we want that education to be an extension of the things that we value as a family. And so I think a lot of people put their kids in sports not thinking that or not really thinking about that. And then they tolerate behavior from coaches or other parents or just the whole environment that they would never tolerate at home. And they turn the other cheek, go because it's sports. And this isn't about not being competitive or anything like that. This is really just all about you know, what do we value, and wouldn't we recognize that our kids, even if they're phenomenal athletes, they'll have two-thirds of their life when their sporting career is done that the things they learn in sports have to carry over to. So if the things that we're teaching them are, you know, you are entitled, it's all about you, your bad behavior doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't really jive well with life. But if we're right, using sport to teach perseverance and overcoming difficult situations and how to deal with challenges and use it as a developmental place for character, well, then you know, it's a great investment. And so it's very hard to say in general, well, what should you do in this situation, because I don't know the situation. But all I'll say is that I always advise parents, is this a difficult situation or is this a dangerous situation? And if it's difficult, then it's a learning opportunity. If it's dangerous, right, you have a coach who's physically or mentally abusive, or if the environment's so bad that your kid's coming home, you know, in tears every night because they're losing their self-respect and their esteem and all that, well, then you might have to say, you know what, you're just not going to, you know, we're gonna shut it down right now.
You do a number of workshops, is that correct?
Correct. That's kind of what our organization does, is we do workshops for schools and sports clubs and associations all over the world now.
Can you give me a breakdown of, like, how do these workshops work?
Yeah, sure. So our speakers go in a day at a time, and what we usually advise is that we do something for parents, that we do something for coaches, and then that, you know, sometimes with older kids we'll do workshop with student-athletes on leadership, or we'll work with board of directors on how do you create a values-based sports organization. But basically, how do we stop this, you know, huge dropout rate in youth sports and create environments where it serves the needs and values and the priorities of the kids playing and not necessarily the adults spectating or coaching.
Now, let's talk about the coaches. Some of the things that you find, the areas that coaches need to improve on when it comes to doing coaching of athletics, some of the things that you've noticed that you want to see changed. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, coaching, well, there's a couple things, right? Number one, 30 years ago, coaching was something that was done by usually teachers and PE teachers and people who had a background in child development and psychology and education. And now a lot of times coaching is done by people who have played the game at a very high level but don't understand children. And we don't do a good job giving them the why. And so they coach 9-year-olds like they were coached when they were 20 and wonder why the kids don't respond, or wonder why only half the team shows back up the next year. And so what we try to really tell and teach coaches is that it's a myth that coaching's all about X's and O's. Coaching's a relationship business. And when you start to look at and define who is the best coach that you ever had, then you really start to say, well, am I pursuing the things to become that type of coach? Or am I just looking for the next magic practice, as if there's one out there that, oh, as soon as I learn this, I'll be the next top coach? Because coaching is really about, you know, dealing with players on an individual level, giving each individual what they need, fitting them into that team environment if it's a team sport, and building culture. And most people start with the X's and O's and assume all that other stuff happens by itself, and it really doesn't. So we try to shortcut the learning curve, especially for young coaches, and teach them how to make this a place where kids actually want to show up.
What was the dropout rate for kids in
sports? Well, right now, the sort of the standard accepted number is about 70% of children are done with organized sports by the age of 13. And I know Canada just did another study, and they came up with a lot of the same reasons why kids quit. And while those numbers are are older, I think you look at most organizations, the amount of young teams playing and then the amount of teams sort of high school age playing, and it's there's a significant drop out there.
Do you think funding is an issue as well with these teams, or lack of?
Well, definitely. And again, it just depends on where you are. You know, the U.S. has this pay-to-play model, so everything is funded by parents. And sometimes in other countries, part of it is funded by the government. You know, they don't have sports in schools. They don't, you know, so they fund outside local sports clubs to provide these activities for kids. But, you know, what's happened is that as sports has become hyper-competitive on the youth level, we've pushed the age where this hyper-competitiveness starts, where travel sports start, where cuts start, down younger and younger and younger. And when we do that, we start pushing these higher costs down younger. So then all of a sudden you have a soccer team of six-year-olds who have to pay $1,000, $1,500 to play soccer when all you need is a space and a round thing, and those kids could be playing. And now you've created these huge barriers to entry. So, yeah, I think one of the biggest causes of the dropout or just the barriers to entry to sport in general is access because of financing, access because of facilities, and then the environment once they get there isn't a good one.
Right. I know access to facilities is a huge one because, you know, soccer can sometimes be on the same field as a baseball. And so one season's over and the other one is up, and there tends to be a little bit of a competitive crossover.
Exactly. And you know, what's happened, too, is that as facilities have become more expensive to build with synthetic turf or these super ice rinks or indoor soccer fields or whatever, the entities that build them, they try to recoup some of that money in rental fees. Well, the park and rec soccer team where the kids pay $80 a year to play can't afford to rent the $300 an hour turf, but some competitive club can. So all of a sudden, well, that's where the fields go to. So the kids who are just starting out or just saying, hey, I just want to be out here being active, start getting squeezed out because the facilities are so expensive as well.
And you talk about this with the coaches as well, or do you also talk to facilities and try and encourage them to be a little bit more lenient, you know, or open with their expenses to encourage more kids into soccer?
Well, you know, it's not just soccer. I mean, we work across all sports. And you know, we don't really talk directly to facilities managers, but we do sometimes get hired by cities or local governing bodies who do control these facilities. And how do we schedule in a way that there's access for all? And also, can we get smarter about our scheduling, right? You've got a full-size soccer field, And there's only two teams of eight-year-olds on there, each getting half a field. And it's like, really? Like, you sure you could fit four teams per half on that field? And that's plenty of space for those kids. So I think this is part of it as well, is scheduling smarter, finding ways to use the hours better. You know, I have a friend who is starting sort of working with school districts in Canada. It's called Global Sports Academies, and basically finding some of these higher-end hockey players and golfers and soon-to-be soccer kids and helping them be students at a school, but then at 10 a.m. instead of PE, they go and do their hockey practice at a time when that hockey rink is empty. And now it takes a lot of these kids off those prime hours of, you know, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. till 11 at night. You know, and it fills those hours where, you know, they don't get heavy usage. And so I think being, you know, if you lay out the amount of hours facilities are available, technically we have enough. But if you lay out the overlap between when kids are available and facilities are available, we have a huge shortage.
Well, coming right up, we'll talk more with John O'Sullivan and Changing the Game. We'll be right back.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
America's Web Radio is the most diverse and informative radio station anywhere in cyberspace. We have shows about health, business, current events, entertainment, home care, and everything in between. We appreciate your continued support of America's Web Radio.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. And today we are talking with John O'Sullivan, who has a passion that is to share tips and guidelines for those who want to raise mentally healthy and physically healthy athletes, and the creator of the Changing Game Project. John, let's now talk about the parents and their role and how important their role is in raising healthy athletes. What kinds of advice or tips do you have to give to parents?
Well, that could be a whole multiple-hour conversation. I think, you know, we can talk about a couple things. First of all, you know, what kids say all the time to me is, I get one childhood, let it belong to me. So your role as a parent is to help your kids find what they're passionate about, not determine it for them. And I think that's really, really important, because if a kid's ever going to be a high-level athlete, they have to love what they're doing. They have to have great enjoyment doing it so that they do it enough to get really good. You can force a young kid into a sport, but if it's not theirs, if it doesn't belong to them, they're not going to stick with it long enough to ever be good at it. So I think, you know, that's one of the really, really important things. And then two, let that experience belong to them. So don't live vicariously through your kids. We didn't strike out 10 batters. My son did, right? We didn't score 3 goals. My daughter did. And so we let kids go. We give them control of the experience. We accept their goals and reasons for playing. And then we become just their biggest fan. You know, I mean, that's where a lot of parents, we just have to start. Other things, I mean, just be patient. This is a huge one. We've lost patience for player development and athlete development. We think it's supposed to develop in a straight line from A to B, but it's not. It's messy. It's squiggly. Kids have ups and downs. We forget to look at, well, why is my kid struggling? Is he the smallest and the one out there? Is he the last one to grow? Are they struggling because of a confidence issue? And so just being patient and realizing that it takes time for kids to be good at anything, and there's nothing wrong with your DNA if they're having a bad week or a bad month.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of it. So, you know, these are all things that I think as parents we can take a step back and just be like, just chill out. And if our kids love it, then we support that. And if they want to do other things, well, we should support that as well.
Yeah. What should parents do if, you know, their child is reluctant or scared to try sports, or they become scared? So, for example, if they had a game and they got, you know, injured, and then they're scared to go back into the sports again, what parents should do?
Well, you know, first of all, I think it's important. We can sort of differentiate that it's absolutely incredibly important for kids to be active. Now, it doesn't mean they have to necessarily play on a team sport. They can go ride the bike with the family. They can play at the playground. They can go for a hike. They can do yoga, whatever it is, right? So, you know, some kids are reluctant. We have to also understand that sporting skills, movements, what we would call fundamental movement skills or physical literacy, right? Running, jumping, catching, throwing, tracking, all these things, these are not necessarily innate traits. There are learned skills. Some kids pick them up really, really quickly. Some kids, it takes a while. And so what I say to parents all the time when they're like, oh, my six-year-old's just not an athlete, I say, well, if your six-year-old was struggling with reading, would you say, oh, my six-year-old's just not a reader, so we're just not going to worry about reading? No, you'd say this is a fundamental life skill that will have a profound effect if he or she doesn't learn how to do this, so let's do something about it. Now, if we, you know, take that into sports, and we know that, you know, children who are active at 10, 11, 12 years old are likely to remain active for life. They have one-tenth the rate of obesity. They do better in school. They're less likely to do drugs. They have lower health care costs in their lives. I just got back from this event at put on by the Aspen Institute in Washington, D.C. a couple days ago, and, you know, the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, was there speaking about this, and Billie Jean King, and all the leaders from across sport in the U.S. and Canada. And there was this fascinating statistic, and I just pulled it up here, that if 100% of the youth in the United States had a healthy activity level, which I believe is just 60 minutes a day of activity, we'd have 991,000 fewer overweight and obese kids. We'd save $26 billion in direct medical costs a year, $43 billion in productivity losses saved, and 20 million years of life saved, meaning they'd live a combined 20 million years longer. I mean, think of those numbers, right? They're astronomical.
That is astronomical.
Minutes a day. And so we really need to get kids moving again. Right now in the U.S., the activity level has dropped so far that the average child has less outdoor active time than someone who's in prison. And that's crazy.
Wow. So we need to get the kids out there.
Yeah, and so it doesn't necessarily mean they have to be on the ice hockey team or the soccer team, but they need to be doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what about if the child is just not interested? You know, how do we handle it as parents? And, you know, and at what level do you have to, do we push them? Or, you know, what kind of encouragement tools should we try and do if that child is just not interested? Especially because of the age of the screens and the video games. I know it's a battle. How do we get them to be more interested?
So, you know, it's a hard thing, and I think for any parents of really, really young kids, you know, start the way you want to continue, right? If you don't want your kids staring at a screen all the time, don't hand them your phone when they're a year old or 2 years old and have them stare at it, right? This is something my wife and I agreed on really, really early. We wouldn't buy video game consoles. We wouldn't hand kids a phone or an iPad to entertain them. We would say, go out, do something, get out and play. I understand that some people live in cities and that's harder to do, but finding ways to keep them moving is huge. Number two, we always walk this balance as parents between, you know, can we give kids what they want, which is really important, and as the adult, can I be the adult in this situation and know better? So just like, you know, some people say to me, well, you know, my 8-year-old only wants to, you know, play video games. What should I do? And I say, well, you know, my 8-year-old only wants to eat macaroni and cheese. But as the adult, I know he needs to eat some vegetables if he's going to be healthy. So I say, no, you can't just eat macaroni and cheese. You're going to eat vegetables, right? This is I'm being the adult in that conversation. So if we know that children who are not active have a 5-year shorter life expectancy than their parents do, right, then we should be the adult and say, no, you've got to do something. We got to do something. And if I live in an apartment building, maybe we're just going to take the stairs instead of the elevator. But we can all do different things to get kids moving and promote and encourage healthy habits. Again, it doesn't mean forcing them to play on a soccer team that makes them miserable, but it can be the understanding of you've got to do something, so what's it going to be?
It is important. I'm sure you would agree with me that parents should also be actively involved in doing some sports as those role models as well.
Yeah, and again, it doesn't have to just be, you know, getting out. I mean, it's just showing that you're out there, right, with a young kid, you know, sitting on the floor with them and doing a push-up or wrestling or whatever, or let's just go for a walk or go for a hike or, you know, go for a swim or something, right? It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a world-class athlete to be active with your kids and help them learn these fundamental movement skills that it's really critical that they develop, you know, prior to the age of 10. The kids who develop these skills become more comfortable in playing sports. But if they aren't encouraged to do those things, to catch, to throw, to run, to jump, then they're, of course they're going to shy away from sports because it's a place where they don't have any competency.
Not too long ago, I was actually reading an interview that you did, and you talked about young athletes hating the ride home with their parents after a game that might have gone too badly. And I'm being open here because I'm, you know, being in that situation on the ride home. You know, my son's in the backseat crying while I have a husband who's not happy because the game didn't go well. What kind of advice or what would you tell parents like me to do during that post-game ride home?
Well, so, you know, this is something I think, you know, there's a great organization called Proactive Coaching. Founder there, Bruce Brown, did exit interviews with athletes for many years, and this is what they came back with is their number one worst memory of sports, right? The ride home, because they're physically, they're emotionally exhausted, and yet we got them locked in the car, and we're going to make this a teachable moment. And what kids tell us over and over is this is not a teachable moment. There's actually research out of Australia now that the kids say, especially when it's when they won by a lot, just let me enjoy that time. And when they lost by a lot, you know what? Like, I already feel bad enough. There's a better time to talk about this. If you know what you're talking about, I'm happy to be taught by you, but just not right here, right now. And so as a parent, I think, number one, if your kids bring up the game and they want to talk about it, by all means, have the conversation. If they don't bring it up, then find a better time to have it. And let that time belong to them. When they put it to bed, you put it to bed. And I think, you know, use that time in the car to talk about other stuff. I'm not saying you shouldn't talk to your kids in the car, but not as a time to criticize and critique their performance and say, you know, how bad the coach was and how bad their teammates are and things like that. Kids just say over and over and over, they don't really, you know, like this. Some kids don't mind having the conversation, and they're probably happy to bring it up. But those who don't, talk to your kids and find a better time to have the talk, and I think you'll find a much better relationship surrounding sports.
You know, you talked about, you know, playing sports is all about confidence. How do we give our children, you know, that confidence?
Well, first of all, confidence is something that's not given, it's earned.
Mm-hmm.
You become confident when you know you've gone out there and you've done the work as an athlete and you've worked hard at your skills and your tactics and your fitness and all these things. Yeah, that's where confidence comes from. And I say that with just this analogy, right? Is your son going to make the pressure free throw in basketball if you tell him 100 times you're such a good free throw shooter, or if he goes out and practices 100 free throws? So confidence is earned, number one. Number two, confidence also comes from having a family member who believes in someone and having, you know, a coach, someone outside the immediate family who believes in them. And so when athletes have a coach who loves them as a person and treats them as an individual and they're not afraid to fail, it's far more likely that they'll be confident to take that shot or to make the big save or whatever because they know that they're believed in. So confidence, they earn it through their hard work, and adults can either be people who enhance that confidence that they've earned, or we can be confidence breakers by not believing in them. And so we need to be confidence builders.
Right. Okay, we'll be right back after these few words from our sponsors.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, It seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren. On Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
John, just before the break, we talked about the roles of parents and coaches in sports. One of the things I wanted to talk a little bit more is about the children, and also let's talk a little bit more about accountability in sports. Can you give me some words about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, everyone has some accountability in sports, right? So, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, this generation of kids growing up now, growing up without a lot of accountability. They're not accountable for their actions or the work they put in and all that. And so I think it's a great place to learn accountability. So with the athletes that I work with, we talk about don't just give me goals. I want to be an Olympian, right? What is the commitment that you're going to make every day and willing to be held accountable for doing to achieve those goals? That's something real, right? The other thing is just a dream, right? The other thing's just, that's what I want to live forever. That's nice, right? What are you going to do to live forever? So I think from an athlete standpoint, you need to be accountable for the things that you're in control of, which is your focus and your preparation and the work that you put in. As coaches, we have to be accountable for the way that we treat athletes and the culture that we create. What the athletes tell us is they want to be treated with respect and encouragement. They want positive role models. They want people who are fair and good communicators. They want us to know what we're talking about. And from a parental standpoint, again, it's, you know, we're accountable for getting our kids there, but then I think stepping back and letting the experience belong to the kids, making it safe to fail, being patient with the developmental process, all that is really, really important.
Right. And then I know just being witness to sports as well, adults, and they don't mean it in a bad way, but they do tend to take the joy out of sports. How do we fix that? And I know you've written a blog article about this as well, but how do we fix it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, and it's funny, I mean, that blog quickly got, a couple hundred thousand views, so obviously it hit home.
It resonates with everyone.
With a lot of people, right? And so, in that I talked about different ways that adults, and often unintentionally, take the joy out of sports. Number one, when we coach from the sidelines, right? Our kids have a coach. So if we're not the coach and we're yelling instructions to these kids that are contradicting what the coach is saying, not a good thing. That it's confusing and it takes away ownership of the experience. And most adults understand that. When I ask a crowd of parents, what do your kids want you to say from the sideline, they all yell out nothing. So they understand what kids want, but then they show up at the game and they yell and scream. And kids say, I'd prefer if you didn't do that. I think coaches sometimes take the joy away by micromanaging and, you know, coaching when the ball's rolling, when we are screaming instructions with a person in a game who's already trying to make a decision, and we're trying to, you know, give them, we sort of give them this cognitive overload, right, of do I listen to the voice or do I figure out what's happening here on the fly? So that makes it not fun. We disrespect officials. You know, kids are not always great listeners, but they're amazing imitators. So when we disrespect officials and authority figures, then guess what? Our kids are going to as well. When we question coaching decisions, it undermines an authority figure. Same as when we comment on their team's play, where we're sort of talking about their friends behind their back. You know, and then I also say, again, you know, making that ride home a teachable moment, that often takes the joy out of sports. And so how do we fix it? It's really having those conversations with our kids, asking them what they want. What do you want out of this experience? What do you want me to do on the sideline? What do you want me to say in the car home? and then accepting their answer and saying, okay, how much of that can I do? And I've met parents who have just said straight out, well, you know what, this is entertainment for me. I've invested all this money and time, so I'm going to do what I want. And I'm just like, well, okay, so sports is not about your kid then, it's about you.
Yeah, and also, you know, in some eyes it's all about the winning, you know, being the winner and the winning, which I find sometimes a little bit too focused.
Well, yeah, exactly. And again, this is the place that I always have to walk this line. Like, I am a super competitive guy. And so sometimes as soon as we say, you know, when we say, oh, it's not about the winning, people all of a sudden say, oh, you're the trophies for everyone guy, and I'm not. But kids like to win. They enjoy winning, but it's not what makes them show up. They seem to understand that you're not supposed to win all your games. It's okay if you have a bad game. You just move on, and it's usually the adults that that can't let go of it. And so I think it's really important that as the adults, we just realize, well, why are the kids there? They're there to enjoy themselves. They want to learn. They enjoy the excitement of competition. But whether they win or lose, they want to come back and do all those other things again. It's usually us adults who can't get over the fact that we didn't have a great game.
Right. Do you think sports organizations put too much pressure on kids and families to go into professional sports at such a young age?
Well, I think so. I think to an extent we pushed the idea of the importance of competition, right? Got to go to these travel tournaments, got to cut the bad kids and only keep the good kids way, way too young. And what the science shows is really that you want to wait as long as possible before you're picking your, quote, future elite athletes. And, you know, certainly until after they go through puberty. But I just had a conversation with a gentleman in whose town, you know, they're cutting soccer players at you know, and only have one team of 14 kids at 8 and 9 years old, and then wonder why they can barely field a high school team. Like, well, why are you cutting kids? Like, you should be keeping as many kids at 9 year old as possible. Teach them how to play. And so, you know, these are the things that I think we have to just recognize that. You know, the kids just want to be out there, and they need to learn on their own timeline, and we need to keep as many kids involved as possible for as long as possible, right? And then as coaches and parents, create the best environment possible for them to play in.
Right. I find, especially within the hockey, the fights among the parents, it's a pretty sad state of affairs, and, you know, sad for the kids, for them to see their parents like that as well.
Crazy. I mean, I think a parent who is in a fist fight in the stands at minimum shouldn't be allowed back in those stands for a year. And I would have no problem if they said zero tolerance, you're gone. Right? And so, I mean, why we tolerate that is unbelievable. I mean, imagine if two parents showed up and they insisted on having a right to watch their kids take a math test and then got in a fist fight over it. Would we ever allow them back on school grounds? No. So why do we sort of ignore these things or just say, oh, you know, that's just Danny's dad? Like, that's crazy. If we had more zero tolerance for that type of behavior, or coaches who behave that way, or people who are just over the top with officials and just said, you know what, your kid can keep playing, but you're not allowed to come here anymore, we'd be in a far better place, I think.
Yeah. And what about injuries? Because I know injuries is on the rise, especially with the whole awareness of concussion among children in sports.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly some injuries that are on the rise because of early specialization, right? So these are elbow injuries in young baseball players, or maybe overuse injuries in kids who only play one sport, whereas 25 years ago they used to play multiple sports. So there are certainly those type of injuries are on the rise. Things like concussions, I don't know that we have a lot of data that says there's more concussions, but we certainly have better diagnostic tools and baseline testing, and we certainly is a lot more awareness of what causes these things and the importance of pulling kids out of sport when they have one, when they sustain one, because a repeated concussion can be just such an awful life-changing thing in a negative way. So, sports is always, we can never legislate all the risk out of sport. You're always going to have, the opportunity to blow out your knee or break a leg or even get hit in the head. And like anything, we have to accept that there's going to be some risk. We can't create, this is not the boy in the bubble. And if sport can't be 100% safe, then we shouldn't do it. Like that to me is a ridiculous attitude.
Right. And do you think, should the level of sports playing be staggered based on age groups? I know we talked about 60 minutes a day for each child, but the intensity or the level or the type of sports, should that be modified by as the child grows because their body gets stronger?
Sure. So, I think I've heard some physicians say, and it seems like an easy enough number to track, no more hours, the amount of organized play per week for a kid should never exceed their age, right? So if you've got a six-year-old, six hours of organized sport is plenty for a week. They can go out and play in the yard and play pickup and run around, but they shouldn't be doing 20 hours a week of that. If they do, they're going to get injured, they're going to get hurt, and they're probably going to burn out. So there's that piece of it as well. But, yeah, most sporting organizations now understand that when we tailor games for the needs of the kids, it works better. So we have small-sided soccer and cross-ice hockey and, flag football and three-on-three basketball and modified balls and modified tennis rackets and things like that. I mean, this is huge, right? We shouldn't be putting adult tools, right? You wouldn't give a kid an adult size axe and say, okay, go split wood. We give them an adult size football and then say, go throw a pass with this thing. And they're like, really? Like, come on, I can't pass this. So these things are important, that we modify games so that it fits the kids. And there's been some great videos done by the English FA in soccer where they created a soccer field to give adults the feeling of what it feels like for 9-year-olds to play on a full-size soccer field, where it's 400 yards long and 150 yards wide, and now the corner kick, you can't even reach the goal on your corner, on the corner kick. Well, that's what an 8-year-old playing on a full-size field feels like, and we're like, what's wrong with these kids out there? Well, it's not fun to run that far and not to be able to, reach the goal with a kick. That's why we play on a smaller field.
Well, we'll be right back after these short messages with John O'Sullivan.
America's Web Radio is the most diverse and informative radio station anywhere in cyberspace. We have shows about health, business, current events, entertainment, home care, and everything in between. We appreciate your continued support of America's Web Radio.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Now, if you've ever seen five-year-old soccer, it's amazing. This is a giant scrum of players, and it moves up and down the field, and there's lots of giggling and laughing. Sometimes a player breaks out and scores in the right goal. Sometimes kicks in the wrong goal. Twice the chance of success. But it doesn't matter, right? She's happy. Parents are positive. Everyone's supportive. Coaches are positive. There's no referee to yell at. This is what sports is supposed to be. Well, on this particular day, there was a 10-year-old boys' game right next door. And it should be just the same, right? But it was completely different. It was a competitive 10-year-old boys' game. And I say competitive in quotes because it wasn't the kids who were competing harder. It was the adults. A kid makes a bad pass. The ball gets stolen and the other team scores. And then all hell breaks loose. The coach jumps off his bench. He screams at the kid and he yanks him out of the game. Next, his dad is on the other sideline screaming at him. His friend's parents, they're screaming at him. And as I'm watching this, I'm saying to myself, wow, this is exactly why children drop out of sports. Because sports is supposed to be about children playing and children having fun and learning. And none of that is happening here. Now, I want to just invite you for a moment to get into the mindset of a 10-year-old boy or any young athlete today, because it's very, very different than when I was growing up. You go to a game, and you're just going to play a game, but yet so many of the adults, they're acting like it's the World Series. They're acting like it's the NBA Finals, and you're just there to play a game. There's coaches and parents screaming at you from the sidelines. Sometimes they're screaming at you. Sometimes they're screaming at the referee. Sometimes they're screaming at each other. Now, you get in the car after the game, and you just want to relax and emotionally unwind. And yet, this is the time when so many parents choose to deconstruct your game and criticize and critique your performance. Now, you sit around your kitchen table, and you hear your parents talking about the time and the financial commitment that it takes to play youth sports. Maybe you'll get a scholarship down the line to help pay for all this. And that just adds pressure and stress. And then finally, at the end of the year, the end of the season, when you're ready to move on to another sport, what happens? Your coach sits you down and says, you can't do that. You're not moving on. Because if you're going to stay on this team, you need to play year-round. And if you don't, I'm going to give your spot away. This is what so many children feel these days, this type of pressure. And that's why 7 out of 10 of them quit youth sports. 7 out of 10 are done.
That was great listening to that excerpt from TED Talks. And I do highly recommend everyone listen to the whole presentation on TED Talks. Just have to search his name, John O'Sullivan, and you will find him. John, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the future for youth athletes and sports. How do you envision it, or where would you like to see it go?
What I think, and I like the analogy that the Aspen Institute's Project Play initiative
uses, and they say right now our youth sports model is a pyramid. And so obviously as kids get older, the pyramid is they go up, you know, the pyramid gets narrower and narrower, and there's no place for people anymore. So what Project Play Initiative says is let's square that pyramid. Let's teach all kids 12 and under, you know, teach them how to move, and then let's create a space in sport for the Olympic-level athlete, the competitive athlete, and just the recreational person who wants to be active for life. And so I think everything we've talked about today is about that. How do we create a space in sport so that it's not just ultra-competitive or not serious at all, but where's that middle ground for someone who just likes to get out there and compete but doesn't want to give their whole life to it? That's what we're missing right now.
And, you know, some quick pearls of wisdom for advice for, you know, for parents, coaches, and athletes of all kinds. And that's a very loaded question, but what kinds of advice would you give for each group?
Well, to parents, I just say let your kids enjoy their childhood. Introduce them to lots of things. Let them find the things that they're passionate about and be the adult in the situation, be that positive role model they need. For coaches, recognize that the things that you teach your players are going to stick with them for the rest of their life. Your words are incredibly powerful, so you better be very intentional about everything that you say and do, because you don't get to pick and choose what they remember about you. And then I would think for athletes, it's just, you know, have fun. Enjoy this time. Don't be afraid to stand up for yourself and say to mom or dad or a coach, you know what, you're taking the fun out of this. Let's add a little enjoyment back into this. And then if you really love something, if you really want to do something, if you really want to be good, well, guess what? You're going to have to make some sacrifices and make some commitments that maybe your friends aren't going to make towards a sport. And that's okay, because if it's your goal, then you'll have a great time going after it.
And what's next for you? What are your future plans?
Well, as I said in the beginning, the Change in the Game project has grown so fast. Now our blog gets, you know, 500,000 plus views a month, and our Facebook page is more than doubled this year, and our Twitter following's more than doubled. And so people are looking for this message. So we have speakers working for us, and we just want to keep getting out there and becoming and being a trusted resource for parents and for coaches who want to do sports differently, who actually want to do sports the right way, the way that the science says it should be done, the way that the best practices in coaching says it should be done. And so that when they say, let's do it this way, and someone says, no, let's not, they can say, well, here's why I think that. Here's the good information. And so, you know, we're continuing to do our workshops all around the world. But what I'm super excited about is this summer, July 8th to 10th in Boulder, Colorado, myself and two other phenomenal coaches are putting on a coaching conference that's unlike any other. And it's called the Way of Champions Coaching Conference. And basically it's all about leadership and how to build culture. And my partners in that are Dr. Jerry Lynch, who works with Steve Kerr and Golden State Warriors, as well as he's up to 35 NCAA titles and teams he's worked with on this, and James Leith, who's the head of leadership at IMG Academy in Florida. And we're just going to put on a three-day event for coaches like you can't get anywhere else. And so we've got coaches coming in from all over the world for that, and that's what I'm really, really excited about.
That's really exciting. And where is that going to be held again, and how would people find information on that if they want to go?
Just July 8th to 10th in Boulder, Colorado. And the best way is just go to my website, which is changingthegameproject.com, and if you go under the events tab and put your cursor on that, you'll get a little drop down, and there it'll be.
Great. And we'll also put it on our Core Projects show page as well for the audience as well.
Great.
And how many people are actually in your team as well?
Well, we have three speakers working with us now who are, you know, on the road, and I have a wonderful assistant, and I have an intern who's working with me this summer who's great as well. So, you know, our goal is not to be the biggest team. We just want to have a group of passionate, smart, people who are, you know, who can go and tell their own story and share their own story as an athlete and as a coach and as a parent and help other people with their journey.
Right. Are you doing any more TED Talks as well? Because you did a really great presentation, which I'll put again up on the Cool Project site.
I'd love to do another one. That was one of the funnest things I've ever done. You know, I feel like I have another one in my future. I have an idea for it, but I have not been asked to do a second one at this point, and nor have I applied and sought it out. And so I feel like when the time is right, the event will appear for me.
That's great. And I guess some of the one of the things that I did want to talk to you very quickly about is, you know, in your book, before we wrap up, but this is one of the questions I did want to ask you about, was in your book you actually talked about talent identification. That was one of the things you did talk a lot about. Can you explain that to me?
Well, I think what I talk about a lot, and I've done this a lot on my blog, is talk about the difference between talent selection and talent identification. Right? We're very good at talent selection, which is pick the biggest, strongest, fastest, usually oldest kids born closest to this arbitrary calendar cutoff, and then we like to cut all the rest. But that's not how talent develops, right? That's the talent that shouts. But I forgot the guy who first used the term. We have to look for the talent that whispers. That's talent identification. Well, what's gone into those kids so that they're so successful? And what about the quiet kid over there? What about the kid who hasn't grown yet, isn't quite big, strong, and fast, but is incredibly skillful? If our mentality is select the best kid so we can win in the next 3 to 6 months, that kid gets missed. But if we're really trying to identify talent for the top level in the long term, we can't ignore the late bloomers. And so it's something that I'm passionate about because right now, again, as we have become so results-oriented at really young ages, we coach in a way and we select players in a way that helps us win today but does not help develop players and keep players in the game for the long run. And this is something that's really important that we change.
Right. Or you do a lot of travel, so what's your calendar sort of like when you're traveling around?
Well, that's why I have an assistant, so I don't have to remember what my calendar is like. But you know, I'm all over the map. But yes, I have some work coming up in Calgary for sure, and I think this fall. But yeah, I have speaking coming up in Oregon, where I live, California, New York, New Jersey, Georgia, Texas. Yeah, we're all over the place. Ohio, North Carolina, those are the ones that come to mind.
Right. Well, it's great, and you know, I do encourage everyone to go to your website to see where you are, because you're definitely well worth you know, listening to when it does come to raising youth and athletes. I want to thank you so very much for being on the show. It was such a pleasure. I'm sure that everyone's learned a lot from your wise words, and thank you again. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on and for helping us to share the message of the Change in the Game project.
Yes, and it's definitely a great project.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. And if anybody wants to get a hold of John, again, you can go to his website, which is, John, can you repeat it again for us?
Yeah, sure. Simple, changingthegameproject.com, or you can search for Change the Game Project on Facebook, or if you're into Twitter, it's at CTGProjectHQ.
Perfect. And if anyone wants to have any other questions or would like to get a hold of us at The Cool Project Show, you can drop us a line at thecoolprojects@americaswebradio.com. We will also have links to Changing the Game Project on the coolprojects.com website under America's Web Radio. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and have a great week. Bye-bye for now.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com. the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.